You're listening to Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition with me, Greg Hughes. Hope we find you very well. Coming up on the programme, Maria Cahill will join me before 11 to discuss the fallout from the allegations she's made in the media and how things have progressed since. Geraldine Herbert from Wheels for Women tells us about her motoring website for ladies and has some winter driving tips for all of us. Niall Gibbons of Tourism Ireland joins us to discuss a 9.3% increase in visitor numbers this year and if that has impacted on the North West. Patricia McBride's in studio from On Green on Theatre. She's running the Dublin Marathon to raise funds. We'll hear why. And Fergal O'Leary of the Blood Transfusion Board's on talking about an interesting new app. All this and much more. Your contributions, more than welcome. 086 77 00 555. That's the text number. Or you can call us on 074 91 25000, or tweet me at Greg Hughes 2. Here we go again. The next 2 hours, very busy. Hope you are with us between now and 12 and beyond indeed. OK, our papers today are thanks to Kelly Centre, Mountaintop Letterkenny, and reviewing them is Christy Galligan, the community activist. Good morning to you, Christy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming in once again. Always a pleasure to have you in.
Thank you for having me.
Righty. Oh, so what's making the news for us today?
I suppose the ongoing controversy between Sinn Féin and Maria Cahill, allegations in relation to the rape and sexual abuse of Maria Cahill in 1999 and the subsequent fallout from that for the Sinn Féin party. I think it's been well highlighted at this stage, both in media and other and press, in relation to what occurred to Maria Cahill. There's no doubt about that, and the subsequent follow-up and the interrogation, or if you want to call it the kangaroo courts that were held by the IRA at that time, to dealing with different allegations by people who were afraid possibly for going to the RUC because they knew the consequences. If you went to the RUC, you would be seen as an informant, so you were in a no-win situation. The populace as a whole would be seen...
Well, you would have to face the wrath of the IRA.
You would, at that time, and they would want to know the reasons for you at going to an RUC station to make a valid complaint. And you're really in an invidious situation, the people in Northern Ireland would. But this happened after the Good Friday Agreement, and I think that's one of the questions where they signed off on all of these things, where the IRA had, partially gone away, you know, and really didn't really go away, but that people were still subjected or still in fear. And recently, when the arrest of Gerry Adams and the subsequent release of Gerry in relation to an alleged what he was arrested for recently. One of the very telling things in West Belfast was one of the former commanders of the IRA came out and said, "We haven't gone away, you know." And that inherent little, just below the surface threat at all times, I think, is really the danger of for Sinn Féin. That really, have they taken up the democratic process?
Sinn Féin are in an impossible decision. Mm. I think most people would accept that this was of a different time. There was a process ongoing, but we say that is a legitimate argument. We'll take it as such for the purpose of the conversation. Now, we are far removed from that, you know, and the conversation, I don't know if that's you or me.
No, it's you.
Is it? Okay, well, I beg your pardon. Well, the conversation is being diluted to such an extent that really, what are we actually talking about? Are we talking about Sinn Féin? Is it about taking Sinn Féin down, or are we talking about trying to get justice for Maria Cahill?
I think the whole ethos, I mean, the DPP in Northern Ireland, Barry McCrory, is looking at a review, and so is the police ombudsman, where Maria Cahill made a complaint, and it shows you the processes or the difficulty in trying to process something, a valid complaint in Northern Ireland at that material time, even after the sign-off to the Good Friday Agreement, that people were still afraid, and probably are today to a certain degree, not as much maybe, but to a certain degree, about going to make an
official
complaint.
But you're jumping a very important part of this story, and that is the fact that Maria Cahill, and I'll put these questions to her hopefully, that Maria Cahill withdrew from a legal process.
Yes, because she's seen it as a very drawn-out process, 4 years to take these charges before the courts. And I understand that, dealing with cases, criminal cases over the years, where it maybe took 2 or 3 years, constant adjournments, witnesses that couldn't be obtained, or you arrest people who have, and you're trying to get the evidence, you know, to look at the have enough evidence to bring matters before the court where a judge and jury or even a judge will see that there's enough there to meet the criteria in relation to maybe getting a conviction. But in this case, yes, she withdrew her complaint. And I have great empathy for people, especially when it comes to rape and sexual abuse, because it is an awful thing, I'm sure, for victims. And we know from Rape Crisis Centre and others that's very difficult for people who have been raped or sexually abused to sit before their... But not only once, yeah, but she has to do it twice.
Yes,
she had to do it twice.
Of course. But, I mean, if we're talking about the fallout of it, has this not made it more difficult now for people who have been the victims of a sexual assault, sexual abuse, to come forward? Because really what they're being told is that if you do, well, firstly, there's the legal system perhaps doesn't work. Yes. That's one argument could be made. And as I say, I'm only putting points here as argument. Secondly, if you do come forward and you go through the court system, you could be vilified in the press, you know.
Yes.
So in a very unfortunate sort of way, is it possible that this very high-profile case that perhaps should have empowered people to come forward and make complaints may in fact put them off?
Well, I mean, as Maria Cahill said herself, and I'm sure you'll be interviewing about it, a number of people have come forward. We have two brothers in...
But they've come forward not to the authorities.
No.
They've come forward to her. I'm talking about going forward to the authorities and having faith in the justice system.
Absolutely. Having the confidence to go forward. I mean, there are... really, there are protocols in place now dealing with sexual abuse and the proper guard interviewers for people who have been sexually abused, and the Rape Crisis Centre are involved, and there is something to deal with the victims of crime all the way down the line now, and there's better protocols in place to deal with that. And I think, you know, Maria Cahill is very brave, and I have to admire
what we have now, though, is and another thing is obviously one of her key complaints is kangaroo courts. Now, there'd be very few people, I think, who would contradict a person's point of view that we had a kangaroo court in the Dáil this week. We had accusations being taken as fact.
Yes.
We had, and there is a bit of protection in the Dáil in what you can say, obviously.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we did effectively have that. We had accusations being made by the leader of the country, in fairness, you know, and then another person being expected to defend those allegations.
Yeah.
That's a kangaroo court by any other name, surely.
The difference between the kangaroo court and the Dáil here is...
I'm not trying to make a direct comparison.
No, I'm just saying...
I think it'd be unfair if you sort of tried to make it... I'm not comparing this to what Maria... I'm talking about the judicial system. What Maria Cahill went through, you wouldn't... Yeah. You know, it's a terrible, terrible situation.
I think once you politicise something like this, then, you know, you're losing a little bit of ground.
Well, who politicised it?
Well, I mean... That's the question you have to ask yourself. Did Sinn Féin politicise and try to negate it by saying in their denials and then come out and wrapped the cloak around their leader? Because it is a very totalitarian kind of regime there. You have the man at the top and everybody else more or less obeys what has been said. And that can be very... That's not good in the political sense of the word. Whereas you have the other side of it as well, that you can go into the Dáil Éireann and underprivileged can say what you like without any recourse to the courts or anything else, which is slightly unfair, or more than unfair, because if we say something outside the courts, like we're talking here today, there's every possibility of somebody listening say, is there a matter for litigation?
Mm-hmm.
So you're caught, we're both caught if we say something out of sync.
Mm.
But these things are publicised and well noted in the papers, so we're saying nothing different than what has already been in the papers anyway and publicised anyway. Mm. So, but I think it goes back to the whole thing about victims of sexual crime too. Never forget there was a victim here, and she was the victim of a serious sexual crime. She was a child. Under the law, she was a child. She was abused. And other young children that were out there were probably afraid because of her connections with Joe Cahill and others, senior Republicans as well. There's this thing, a taboo, that you don't go to the RUC. You don't... And Gerry Adams quite explicitly told... You know, said that, I think it was in 1995, look at drug abuse and sexual crime, you don't go to the RUC, you don't report them. So they did it within their own community. So you got expelled or shot. Now, that's not justice.
And that
comes back to...
Of course, but that has been, senior Republicans now, senior members of Sinn Féin saying that was wrong now. But we don't have a time machine.
Oh, no, we can't look at... It's easy for us to look retrospectively back at something.
The conversation sort of starts going in a circle then, because I think people accept that that was of that time. This is where we are now. And you know, it is a circle in that you can't go back and change what happened.
But we're dealing with a lot of old sexual abuse cases, both within the church and other sexual abuse cases, and we have to deal with them in a proper fashion before the courts. If we have enough evidence, bring them before the courts and let's deal with them there.
In the courts.
In the courts, and that's at the end of the day, we have to do it.
Well, we'll be talking more about that, obviously, later on. 086-7700-555 is the text line for your calls and comments and requests. So we'll get through those as the programme progresses. You can call us too. Marion is taking your calls this morning, 07491-25000. What else is in the headlines?
Well, and the tragedy in Carrigdon, we can't say too much of it, I suppose. The matter of the investigation is ongoing. My sympathies to the Cuddihy family, all of the Cuddihy family and the people in Carrigdon, our relations and friends of the Cuddihy family and the mother and father. It was really sad, tragic events in Carrigdon this week.
It's devastated the community. Absolutely. It really has, and far beyond. We often say the community. But look, I'm from the other end of the county, and you know, it's affected me, and it's affected people I know. Because, you know, you sort of, the human condition is that you almost put yourself in that position, and then, you know, it's even more personalised. It's just an awful, awful tragedy.
And it was an awful scene, I'm sure, for a family member or man working in the house at the time. And you know, we've seen these very serious tragic events over the years, you know, both in Sligo, Waterford and other areas, whole families wiped out amongst themselves, or, you know, the internal strife that goes on in people's minds as well that causes somebody to do something like this as well. And it's very sad that for the family, both the Cuddihy mother and father, who are really good people, who were really part of the local society and had given so much, that in their late years their lives can be taken so horrifically, you know, from us. And again, without saying too much, and I suppose the ongoing Garda investigation, somebody has been charged with the two counts of murder. And without saying too much, I can only sympathise and empathise with the family. And
as you mentioned, as it relates to some stories from down the country, and you know, there's been awful tragedies of a brother killing his siblings and then taking his own life, and other cases like that. As it relates to those cases, it brings in an important question as to how we're dealing, you know, with people who maybe are in mental difficulties.
Yeah, and one of the biggest difficulties, I suppose, I found over the years, when you're dealing with people who had mental health difficulties as well, who were arrested and brought in under the criminal law system in some ways, that as it's running parallel with mental health issues, maybe we have to look at the criminal law system and how we deal with people with mental health issues, you know, where we looked at cases before this and where people didn't know where to look, or that we were aware of somebody with mental health issues and maybe we should have brought in medical expertise in time, or running parallel with the criminal investigation and assessing them in an ongoing assessment. And a lot of people, even I'm sure, will say to themselves, God, I saw something terribly unusual with that man or that woman, and as this thing unfolded, and why did I not pick up on it, or why did not report it to the medical or some doctor or some members of the Garda Síochána, that they could have maybe picked up on it and maybe made inquiries about that person. So, I mean, when we're looking at the criminal law is very enclosed in what it requires in relation to proofs, but running parallel with that, I think when we look at all of the other cases down the country, maybe we should have in place some proper response teams or action response teams to deal with those issues of mental health as well.
Like flags and flag,
absolutely. Yeah. I think that's very important.
I mean, obviously, we very much pass on our condolences to the family and friends and the community, and you know, and hope that I don't know, people can come to terms with it in some way or other. Yeah. I find it very difficult to talk about that because, you know, words are words and that's all they do. And people maybe are spiritual and they can get some comfort from that, or they're very, you know.
But I mean, you look at it, and I have attended some very sad occasions over the years in my service, but also that the Garda members, the families and all, receive proper counselling to deal with it as well. I think that's what you need. And as a, and the healing process comes from within, and comes from within the community as well, because I know communities like Karen Donna will, you know, come together in those moments, like here in Letterkenny when we had serious tragedies over there. The community comes together and you really see the light shine, the light shining from people within, and they come out, and they, that warmth, that embracement, and that's very important as well.
Okay, we'll move on to our next topic. Keep your calls and comments coming in. Text machine busy already on 086 77 00 555. You can call us to 0749 125 000. Back with more from Christy after the break. You're welcome back to the Weekend Edition with Greg Hughes in studio for the time being with Christy Galligan. Christy, it's 3 weeks now. Water has been front page news. It's Saturday. You think they'd give us a break from it, but no. The newspaper editors have decided that we want more water, but we don't want to pay for it.
We don't want to pay for it. And you know, as I said, and I've commented on this recently as well, that the whole set up in relation to the water charges was very badly thought out. At the end of the day,
I
shouldn't use the word they're rowing back on it, but they are to a certain degree, because now we're seeing that where each household has 30,000 litres of free water per year, each child under the age up to the age of 17 receives an additional 21,000 litres. But where I and other families have 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 and 23-year-olds who could be living with us, going to university, and they'll be treated as an adult, then I'm going to be in some difficulty, but I see where they're now going to extend
that, it. Yeah, but to extend that logic, though, Christy, that means that if anyone over 18 who hasn't got a job should get free water. Because you can't discriminate against an 18-year-old living on their own and an 18-year-old living with you.
Yeah, the big difficulty here is I really think the charges, as they were set out originally, weren't really thought out, because there was a journalist who did a survey on himself with the help of a company in Kilkenny in relation to the amount of water he was using, and found that he didn't use as much water as he thought he would with a family of three or four that he had at the material time. I think this is where the Irish Water maybe have picked up on, now they're kind of rejigging it again to suit the circumstances.
Well, I think they're rejigging it because they're being told they have to.
They have to be.
But the bottom line is here, a lot of people, they don't care how Irish water is run. They don't care. They don't want Irish water. They want rid of Irish water. They've been paying for water through their taxes, through road taxes, all the time.
Yeah.
And now they're being asked to pay for it again. So it doesn't matter about bonuses. It doesn't matter about anything like that. People want Irish water scrapped.
The legislation's there. The legislation is in place. This is going to
There's
happen.
There's legislation for lots of things.
I know, but Enda Kenny is saying this is going ahead, and that's it.
I don't want to come across as if I'm anti-government, because I'm not anti-anyone, to be honest with you. What Enda Kenny is saying now is, we're going to give you more allowances, we're going to cap the water for two years, and let the next government worry about it. If we're in...
It was called passing the buck. And again, it's a political dimension that comes
into
it.
You must be disgusted with Labour, the watchdogs of government allowing this to happen.
Well, I was a very short-lived Labour candidate.
Don't tell me you've left Labour, have you?
I'm very independent.
Have you left Labour?
I'm independent, should I say.
You're doing the hokey-cokey.
Doing the hokey-cokey, but at the time...
You should have ran as an independent.
I should have ran as independent, but that's another story for another day, Greg.
My faith in politics is just you're an independent again.
Well, I was always independent, really, at the end of the day. I'm very independent in thought and word and deed,
right,
as you know.
I'm going to call you the hokey cokey from now on. You're Labour in, you're Labour out. Just don't shake it all about.
But, you know, the whole...
Do you agree, Christy, I beg your pardon, but I want to sort of get your point of view narrowed down to this. Do you think Irish Water should be dissolved as it is now? Not dissolved, but in other words... Well, no water charges. Concede that people are paying for the water. We've had water, not enough investment in water, but this on the books, off the books talk, you know, people aren't interested in that.
And really, at the end of the day, I thought originally when the Troika and others came in and said, look, this is what you have to impose on the people to pay your bondholders, et cetera, pay off your debts in billions. This is what you must do. You must have a property tax and a water charge. What they should have done at that time, with any modicum of sense, was based on, if you look at abroad, that you have your property tax, your bin charges, all rolled into one. Water charges and all the other services rolled into one. That would have been seem to a lot of people more acceptable than having a separate water charge.
Well, some people are paying £500-600 for bins alone.
We do.
And it's like layers. Firstly, we get the story from Irish Water about bonuses. You know, they're not called bonuses. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if PR companies think nobody has a brain because they're not bonuses. They're performance related
schemes.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
And then we have a situation, and there's plumbers listening to this show that are probably sending their CVs into Irish Water of these incredible call out charges. 180 odd quid for working hours. This is the first hour.
That's the first hour.
And then it's 100 quid afterwards. Yeah. At the weekends or out of hours, 270 for the first hour.
Yeah.
But I presume people can ring their local plumber still.
Well, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be rather give my money to a local tradesman than give
it to
another outside company.
I'd be very interested to speak to a plumber. Yeah. How much was without divulging your own private business, what is a call-out charge for a plumber?
50 to 80 euros.
Is that about right?
50 to 80 euros.
So then Irish Water, after all of this controversy, decide to come out and say that theirs is more than double that. It's almost insulting to the people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's disgraceful. And to say to people, look at what happens inside your property, you are now responsible for it. Even though we've set it up, we've attached these meters onto your water systems. And if something goes wrong, well, sorry. It's kind of a Pontius Pilate, wash your hands off it and negate the responsibility back to the owner. But I mean, it's like the local property tax, I used to call it the registration charge, the first registration charge, that you registered just for registering your property, you were charged 100 euros. And if you didn't pay it, it was up to 225 euros, which was very, very unfair, I thought, at the time. Mm. And how do we reward the people that set this up? We moved them off to Brussels.
Why is no one's campaigning anymore for my septic tank? What happened
it's
to my
very
septic
quiet.
Tank?
Hasn't it? Yeah, the septic tanks have been very quiet.
I mean, it's full now.
Yours full. What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to put it in the next local elections. 086 77 00 555 is the text line. 086 77 No, they didn't mean that badly. 086 77 00 555 or call us on 074 91 25000. So it's November 1st. There's protests all over the country. There's a protest today, actually, a Halloween protest down the country, which should make some interesting copy tomorrow in the papers. November 1st, starting at Mr. Chippy, I think at 2 o'clock in Letterkenny. Will you be at it?
I think I'll just stick my head up above the parapet again. Probably get a shot off, Greg. But I mean, I don't mind. I mean, I genuinely protest.
Would you be going there to support?
I'm a civilian in this.
Of course,
company,
and that's why
I'm
entitled
to.
You'll be going there to protest against the
water. But I do believe, honestly believe, that the water protest is very important, that people need to be seen. But it should not be hijacked. The one thing I will say, if it's going to be hijacked by certain groups or groupings, let's put it that way, for their own political gains, I don't want to be part of that. I think the Irish society themselves, as we've seen in Dublin, that without the so-called speakers that come out from the Dáil to say a few words because they're trying to look after their political necks come the next election, I think we have to see the Irish population, the ordinary middle class, lower class, upper class, whatever you want to call them, they have to come out and they stand up and they speak. But let's not be hijacked. I won't be part of something that's going to be hijacked for political gains. No.
Right, that's what's me. Next?
The next one is, we're looking at the Irish Daily Mail there. This was here on the front of this sheet here. The Traveller gang rampage led to my M7 crash. This is a very sad tragedy this week.
What are your feelings on that headline?
Well, I think, where did they get the information off? It was a member of it was Traveller gangs, and again it comes into ethnicity, minority groups, and I'm sure Pavey Point and others will come out vice versa.
Is that even relevant to the story?
It isn't. Somebody has died. That's what's relevant to the story. And in a very tragic, where a couple of young, I used to call them gougers, are a member of the criminal fraternity. Let's believe it, that criminal fraternity were out and about creating havoc, and they were being followed or pursued by a Garda car.
I mean, it's because it implies that, there's it's obviously designed to sell newspapers, but there are criminals and bad people in all sections of society, in all groups, all ethnic groups, all racial groups.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was a member of, say, for instance, the Asian community.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's...
But I mean, you call it ethnic profiling, you know, and where do they get the information from? But I think media have to be very careful, like the Maria Cahill case and other cases, and the Cuddy case in Karen Dunnow. They have to be very careful how they present what they have in the front of the these sheets, because it implies certain things without proofs. It implies certain things, and you cannot say something unless you have positive proof. And it's very easy to sell papers, but I mean the everlasting damage to people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's out there.
Well, it kind of would. I mean, that one headline may undo a month, 6 weeks' work of what Pavey Point would be trying to achieve.
Absolutely.
But the story, though, in itself. Sorry to put you up on that. Yeah. I just thought the headline. Yeah. It's a paper seller. It's not that it doesn't add anything to the story, really, because you know a person has very tragically going about their own business lost their lives. So
what they should have said was gang rampage led to M7 death crash. Would have been better, you know, a better headline. But this was a very sad. Where the gang were out, some of the gang, three of them were allegedly out in bail when they began their terrifying crime spree in Newport County Tipperary on Thursday afternoon. Subsequently pursued by a Garda car, and poor victim of this was Diana Harton, a 43-year-old woman returning home from the shops. She was killed as her vehicle was sent crashing into a Garda patrol car. You know, and that's the sad tragedy here, that a woman lost her life because of people. And the big, this goes back to the whole ethos about people who are out on bail. And we've talked about this time and time again. There are people, all right, you're innocent until proven otherwise, right? Mm. But at the same time, where there is the Bail Act, and that Bail Act was supposed to strengthen where objections from the Garda Síochána, where people were remanded in custody with consent to bail. But here we are again, people out in bail. We don't know if there was any warrants in existence for some of these people either. And they're running riot.
What's your feelings on high-speed chases?
I know as a qualified member, as a former qualified Garda driver, there are so many variables and anything can happen in a high-speed pursuit chase.
Is it not best just
And they're very controlled, but you look at any of the people who are properly trained in pursuit
chases. But the person you're pursuing isn't properly trained?
No, absolutely not. But if you have enough resources in a high pursuit chase, you can bring that to a reasonably good standstill.
It's going to be on the public highways.
It's going to be public highways,
and you are the guys that are. Yeah. Well, you formerly, obviously, are the Welsh. This is not in this case. Not specific to this case. This is on a broader point, because a lot of these cases spark further conversations. Do you think that's something that needs to be looked at?
Well, there's ongoing training. I know that there's ongoing training in Templemore for people who are involved in this type of advanced training in Garda Síochána. There's advanced training where people are involved in pursuits and where you have to bring it successful or stop the pursuit. And that goes to command and control. Mm-hmm. If there is a pursuit on and it's highly dangerous, the command and control guy or the guy who's driving the patrol says, right, that's it, I'm not going any further because this could get out of control. It leads me on to a recent thing where the Gardaí now, who are not qualified to drive, but are driving under chief's authorisation, can't use the blues and twos. The blues and twos are the sirens and the blue lights. Mm-hmm. And recently I was speaking to a member who informed me that a recent case here in Donegal, where the Gardaí were going to a serious accident, couldn't use their blues and twos because they didn't have a certification to put them on. To be certified to put on blues and twos to go to.
I can't validate that. I'm going to have to take your word on it, but I mean.
Well, I can honestly say, but it was in the papers where Gardaí, who are not qualified to use the blues and twos, couldn't use them. Now they're going to a serious accident. They had to park the car up and walk to the scene of the accident. Now this is how ridiculous the bureaucracy in Dublin has become. I mean, let's think outside the parameters and let's, because we're over, again it comes back to the over-regulation in society and over-regulation in the community, that we're over-regulated, that it stifles and it chokes free thinking and entrepreneurship.
Okay, we've time for one more thing, Christy.
Well, congratulations last night to our Donegal players. Mm-hmm. Michael Murphy and
brilliant, Dyer, wasn't
and,
it?
And McGee and Cole, I thought, and young McHugh, who won very, very prestigious awards. And really, they are the forefront and they are the ambassadors of what's all is good in football.
It's fantastic. The Ryan McHugh situation, though, I mean, you know, he had a fantastic impact on the senior football championship, of course. He is a absolute fantastic talent. Young player of the year. Surely there could have been a slot for him too, though, in the All-Stars team.
I think there could have made a... Because he really excelled. He didn't maybe do it in the final because he was really well marked, but he did deserve it at the end of the day. And I know Martin and I played football together at Vocational School in Carrick and won a few medals together over the years, and along with a few others, and Anthony Malloy and a few of them. And they really excelled. And it's, there must be something in the breeding and the McHughs, because one after the other seemed to spit out these fantastic footballers, these fantastic sportsmen. And I'm not taking away from Niall Gallagher or Mike Murphy or young McGee either. I think they were absolutely fantastic. I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud to be Donegal when I see these guys going out onto the field for us.
And the future's bright. I mean, if we get the right man in, you know, there's a good team there.
That's open to who is going to get it. Are we going to have Rory Gallagher back? Do we know? Who's going to put their heads above the parapet, as I say? And but it's a very tough job. It's a very demanding job. And people will expect the same level as Jim McGuinness, and that's a hard act to follow.
What we want is a quick, clear and transparent and democratic process, which is what we expect and what will happen. And then we can get behind whomever it is and continue the success and build on the platforms that Jim McGuinness has set.
Yes. I mean, he has set the bar, and we have to look at it. And if you're a sports person at all, you'll say, well, how do you excel that? How do you exceed those expectations that everybody has now in Donegal?
Just match them. Just match them. That'll be all right. Don't, you don't have to exceed them. Just match them. Christy, it's always a pleasure to have you in. Thank you so much. Christy Gallagher there, community activist and anti-water protester now on November 1st. the hokey cokey. Okay. Keep your calls, comments and requests coming into the programme. 086-7700-555. That's 086-7700-555. Or call us on 074-91-25000. Marion's taking your calls there. You can tweet me too directly at Greg Hughes. Two back after these. Now, Maria Cahill alleged in a BBC documentary that she was raped by a suspected IRA member in 1997 when she was a teenager, and the organisation then conducted its own inquiry into her account. Ms Cahill also claimed in the Spotlight programme that the IRA responded to her allegations by subjecting her to an interrogation and forcing her to confront her alleged attacker. She also alleges that the Republican movement, including Sinn Féin, covered it up. Ms Cahill claims she then met with Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams about the allegations. Mr Adams has denied very clearly any suggestions he was involved in a cover-up. I'm delighted to say we're now joined on the programme by Maria Cahill. Maria, good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Good morning. Imagine my...
Thank you very much for coming on to the programme. Now, since the documentary, you've had to relive your experience over and over again. You've had to defend your motivation and, to an extent, your credibility. Have you any regrets about this whole thing?
No, I don't have any regrets about my own waiving the anonymity. It was a really, really tough decision to make. But the reason that I did make it was because I knew that it would bring other victims forward for help, and I knew that it would lift the lid on the cover-up of the movement of perpetrators throughout the jurisdiction. I do have regrets in terms... I mean, I regret the fact that Sinn Féin have handled the matter abysmally, I think, particularly towards myself as a victim, but also by attacking me, they, by default... you know, made it much more difficult for other victims to come forward to get help. And, you know, I note that some have come forward in the last few days and have actually made police or Gardaí complaints, and I welcome that. And I think it's actually much more brave of people like that to do it in this climate than what it was for me to do it at the start of last week.
I made the point in a previous part of the programme, and only fair to put it to you too, though, in a way, in terms of encouraging others to come forward, you yourself have perhaps a lack of faith in the legal system to address what you went through, and now that you've come out publicly, as you say, there are certain people that have been incredibly critical of you. Is it not possible, though, the whole process has been counterproductive in that someone who was on the verge perhaps of going and reporting an attack might say, well, look what happened to Maria Cahill, I'm not going to say anything?
Well, I think there are two things here. Yes, I do feel badly let down by both of those agencies in the criminal justice system, but I fully support the police and I fully support, you know, law and order in society, and that the only way to deal with issues of child sexual abuse in relation to putting in protective measures against paedophiles is to go to the police. So I think those agencies, I mean, there is a responsibility on the agencies north and south to ensure that when a victim does come forward, that they're treated in the proper manner and that the perpetrators, you know, are put into a court of law and everything is done possible to prosecute a case successfully.
Well, you were in
my case, sorry, yeah. Greg, actually took 4 years and I was told to potentially take another two before, you know, there were three trials in mine all interlinked, and the head of the PPS has announced that they will have an independent review into their processes, and I welcome that. But just on the victim point, and I think this is really, really important, I do think that there are victims who are very frightened out there, and I do think that that is as a direct result, and you're right, of how I have been vilified in the last week, and I think Sinn Féin created the conditions for a lot of that abuse that I took online afterwards, and I have initiated a Gardaí complaint in relation to that matter. But I want to say to those victims today, you know, there isn't any point in suffering in silence. And if you need help, you need to reach out and get it, and be that through getting yourself counselling or going to the police. Or if someone does want to make contact, I certainly will support them in their efforts to do that, because it is only when people have help and support that they're able to continue with the process. And I think that's really, really important.
Okay, and you were, as you mentioned there, involved in a number of cases, but you withdrew from those. What was the reason? Was it just because of the amount of time, the length of time
no,
it would take?
I mean, there were a lot of reasons, and I wasn't the only. I mean, there were other witnesses in those cases and other victims, indeed, who also were under severe pressure to withdraw their evidence, some for intimidation reasons, some because the length of time was increasing the pressure on them, and there were three interlinked cases, and I never once withdrew my allegations against any of the people involved or accused. What I did was I withdrew support for the prosecution. There were three interlinked trials, one for membership against the alleged abuser, one for the abuse, and one against four other individuals accused of membership. And it was my view that that evidence was being chipped away at and that there was political interference in the case. And as such, I lost faith in the prosecution. And indeed, the prosecution, the first case, collapsed because the police failed to question a suspect in relation to the matter who later turned up for the defence. And that actually had a domino effect then on the other two cases. But there was a sustained campaign against me, after going to the police and giving evidence in 2010. You know, the rumours circulated. We saw online content. I had to move house 4 times as a result of it. I had to move jobs. You know, it was just, the pressure was unbelievable. And I don't think you would expect anybody to have to try and sustain that for any length of time, but certainly not 4 years.
You made allegations, a number of allegations, not least against Gerry Adams. He's stated his position and has denied any cover-up. You've stated your position. We are at something of a stalemate, would you agree? And if you do, well, where do we go from here?
Well, I think Sinn Féin have actually shifted their position. And I kind of, because I've been in the middle of it, Greg, I haven't really had a good reading of it. But I did take a chance to sit down and look at all of the inconsistencies throughout all of the Sinn Féin spokespeople this week. You know, we moved from a situation last week, and actually on your own radio station, I remember Eileen Calder in 2010 raising this issue and being interviewed on the radio and saying that Republicans had moved paedophiles to Donegal and used it as a dumping ground. And I remember Piers Sardy coming out very, very strongly at the time, and I actually have the quote in front of me. You know, he said it was a smear campaign and that they were unsubstantiated, baseless and wild claims. And he then further said last year that any IRA internal investigations and any claim of that was unfounded and untrue. And I think Pierce was put in a really, really difficult position. But I also think that his denial was completely spurious.
Yeah, but
and we've seen that because it's now been admitted, because Gerry, now on Thursday night, Gerry Adams wrote the blog. And the only reason that they admitted to that was because of the Spotlight programme.
Yeah, but the bottom line is here, though, is whilst the concession seems to have been made now that a lot of these matters on occasion were dealt with internally, the question you're asking, though, is if people had personal knowledge, and if people concede that it did happen, but they do not have specific personal knowledge of it, surely you have to accept that.
Well, think about this for a second, Greg. We're dealing with arguably the most powerful man on this island. We're dealing with a man who consistently denies his membership of the IRA. You know, in that obviously that man is Gerry Adams. And Gerry, I am sure there is nothing goes on in Sinn Féin that Gerry doesn't know about. But we also are hearing that, you know, Sinn Féin did conduct internal reviews into this matter a number of years ago in relation to the cases that the IRA were involved in relation to sexual abuse. And I'm telling you, Greg, Sinn Féin have acute knowledge of who these perpetrators are, or some of them anyway, because the dogs in the street know now, the names are out, and that means the people have knowledge, and Sinn Féin should bring forward the information that it has to either the Gardaí or the PSNI in order to put child protection.
But the party is very firm that
it doesn't
have
that
information.
Because nobody knows who they're living beside, Greg.
Mm.
Well, the party may be emphatic about it, and I don't see what else publicly they could say. I mean, it is huge, of huge concern that people do not know where these perpetrators or alleged perpetrators are. And if any other political party was in this situation, you know, heads would be rolling over it. I mean, I just think it's so horrific.
Yeah, but do you want these names?
People have access to children.
Well, let's just say that people were moved south of the border by the IRA. If the organisation, for want of a better word, were dealing with the matter internally. You know, those people, the people accused, have not been through the legal process. Mm-hmm. They themselves faced something of a kangaroo court. You know, maybe they were innocent.
Greg, I think that tone's very, very dangerous, and I want to make this point, and I'll make it very calmly. You know, we have individuals who the IRA suspected of being involved in abuse, who moved them south of the border. You know, those people have access to children, and I take the point they haven't been before a court of law, but the reason that they haven't been before a court of law was because the Republican movement protected them.
So Greg,
you need to let me finish this point. It's so important in relation to children. The Republican movement moved those people across and out of the jurisdiction so that they could never, and their victims would never be able to obtain justice by prosecuting them. And they did that to protect themselves. And the difficulty we now have, and this is why I met the Taoiseach and I met the First Minister, is that people know who these people are, but they don't know where they are. And those people potentially have access to children. And those children could be at great risk. And I think that is the key point in all of this, and that needs to be sorted out.
Okay, it's been claimed your case and claims that you've been making are being used as a political football. Is that how you feel?
No, well, there are two sides, I suppose. You know, one, all I ever wanted was that people would believe it in order to bring, you know, help for other victims, and that people would accept it as an issue. I mean, I do think Sinn Féin have moved, you know, on some of that. They haven't gone far enough. What they've effectively done is they've admitted it happened to everybody else but me, ironically, and, you know, it was myself that brought the issue to light. The second point of that is I don't think you can avoid the politic of the issue. And I think if Sinn Féin had have admitted it last week, they wouldn't be in the situation that they're in now.
You secured an early meeting with the Taoiseach, and it's been claimed, and there is evidence there that other people who've sought such a meeting in not dissimilar circumstances have had to wait much longer. So does that not point to political opportunism on behalf of Fine Gael?
No,
and you're the person that arguably some would say is being used in that situation?
Well, I'm not a person that is easily used, Greg.
I beg your pardon. Just to clarify, Marie, I don't mean willingly being used. You know, I'm not suggesting that that's the case. But if you could want to answer the question in any case.
Yeah, well, in relation to the Taoiseach, I think there was an emergency situation last week where this matter was just breaking, you know, and I did ask for it. And I had met all of the other political parties, including people like the TUV in the North, who I would be absolutely diametrically politically opposed to. But I felt it was so important to do it. I wanted extra resources put in place, and I did. I tweeted up the numbers of the helpline numbers for every rape crisis centre in the South last night, because I have been getting victims contacting, not just myself, but journalists all week, and I'm acutely aware that they need help. But I'm also acutely aware that those centres don't have the proper resources in order to be able to help people. So part of that reason for the meeting with Enda Kenny was to explain that, and also to deal with the very huge issue of perpetrators who have been moved into the South who have access to children, and it needs to be sorted out. So, you know, I thank the Taoiseach for the time that he took. I think he dealt with me in exactly the way a victim of sexual abuse should be treated. He dealt with it compassionately, but I also think he got the issue, you know, and he's not the only political leader to do so. And I made the point last week, I think it's the first time ever on any issue on this island, north and south, that every single political party has been united, you know, on such a sensitive issue. And the only party that I can see who are politicking with it by continually shifting their stance and treating victims shamefully, in my opinion, including myself, is Sinn Féin.
There's been much talk of kangaroo courts and what you went through. No one should ever have to go through, and I'm not making a direct comparison to that other than in the legal system. Enda Kenny was making very strong, asking very pointed questions of the Sinn Féin leader in the Dáil this week. In an environment whereby he has parliamentary privilege, in of itself, is that not a kangaroo court and subventing really the legal system?
No, I think that actually, you know, turns or backs up the Sinn Féin stance where they try to turn those IRA people who brought an 18-year-old, very disturbed, distressed person who had just suffered sexual abuse into a room with her rapist. And I think the only victim in that situation is me, really. And I think that's a complete distraction away from the issue, Greg, if you don't mind me saying. So, you know, it's not a kangaroo court by media. You know, people know who these people are. They know what their backgrounds are. Everybody knows. I mean, if you go to West Belfast, the dogs in the street will tell you exactly what happened to me. And, you know, the fact that the issue is breaking now will help other people because their experiences will have been validated. And I think those IRA people, in my opinion, should go away, crawl under a rock and hide their heads in shame. One of them the other day, just to put this in context to you, shared a post on his, and this is a man who Gerry Adams referred to again in the Dáil as one of the decent people, shared a post on his Facebook page in which a writer had claimed that I had enticed my rapist basically with my virginity, and he later changed the line and said that I had had a, quote, year-long clandestine sexual affair with a silver-tongued IRA man who most young women would likely fancy. That's horrific, absolutely horrific, and Gerry Adams is expecting the Irish public to believe that this man is a decent person, you know. Obviously, that is not a decent thing to do. That man completely traumatised me as an 18-year-old and continues to do so, you know, by the stance in which he's taken on the matter.
Obviously, since you came out publicly, as you've already mentioned, you've been contacted by many people who've come forward with similar cases. Were you prepared for that as a person individually to sort of become, a conduit at the very least, or someone who has to, you know, listen to other people's awful cases, you know, and that must have, is there an emotional strain on you in that regard?
It is emotionally straining, but I mean, also I have had a hell of a lot of support over the last while, and it has been very, very difficult, but and that was why I wanted the resources in place for victims, because it shouldn't be up to me to be the person who is listening to them, but I welcome the fact that people are getting in touch. I did train in counselling years ago, you know, I went through and got the exams. I have a professional reputation now in terms of being able to help people who have those type of difficulties, and you know, I'm quite happy to refer them on to people who can help them much, much better than me. But immediately, it was an emergency situation this week. The attacks on myself completely re-traumatised victims out there and brought their experiences up for them. And some of those people were in a really, really bad way. For example, I had a journalist yesterday who contacted me to say that she was dealing with a very distressed young person at the other end of the phone. And that's why I tweeted up the Rape Crisis Centre helpline numbers late last night, because I'm aware that can be a very difficult time for people. All I want, Greg, is for people to get help that they obviously need. And I want that other children out there on this island are protected by those people who have been moved by the Republican movement around this country and in some cases further afield. That's what this issue is about. Anything else in terms of the politicking of it is a complete sideshow, in my opinion. But the main people who matter in all of this are those children who have been sexually abused.
Maria Cahill, thank you for speaking to us this Saturday morning.
Thanks, Greg.